Tov. So, I'm reading over here from the Rambam and Mor Nevuchim in the third Chelek. So the Rambam says in Parak Lamed Tes, the context of all these prakim in this section of Mor Nevuchim is giving an elaborate system as to what the context of all the Tamei HaMitzvos are in the Torah. The Rambam has a very, very intricate system that dates all the way back to the time of Avraham Avinu and the Armenian culture, the Armenian pagan culture in which Avraham Avinu lived, and it has to do with what was going on during the Dor HaPalaga and the whole religious and cultural environment in which Avraham Avinu lived. And in order to counter all the values of that system, so the Torah comes to establish mitzvos, prohibitions, and imperatives in order to counter that system. So the Rambam says that he's talking in the context now of all the mitzvos that have to do with agricultural laws and different matnos la'aniyim, the gifts to the poor in general. Yesh bo gam mimidas ha'anava. The focus, one of the central focuses of all these mitzvos is to inculcate humility. He says, for instance, by Bikurim, a person, he takes a basket on his shoulders, and he gives explicit, clear recognition to the kindness of God. A person should remember the time of his desperation, even when he's experiencing tremendous wealth. This idea is reminded to us in the Torah multiple times. Right? That you should remember that at one time you were a slave. You were an enslaved population. And God took you out in a miraculous nature, and now you're in your own land and you're prosperous and everything's going great. But you should remember your origins, where you came from. Because there is always a concern. I mean, hamidos hayaduos, from these known character traits, l'chol mi she'nischanech ba'osher, for all those people who grew up in a state of affluence, in wealth. Klomar, what are those attributes? Habi'ita, v'hagava, v'haznachos ha'ashkavos ha'amitios. Haughtiness, right? Disdain for anything lower than you, and a complete negation for any, lofty, noble characteristics. Meaning you see no value in trying to subjugate yourself in order to attain higher qualities, in order to refine yourself. What's being emphasized over here is a deep truth that, and this is really, it goes to the root of the human experience, unfortunately. Fortunately or unfortunately, as we will see, that being in a state of affluence and success, it produces a certain haughtiness. It produces a certain disconnect from the world that poisons the person's mind and heart. Now, we see in the Gemara in Brachos and Daf Lamed Beis something very, 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 very interesting. This is in the Babylon Brachos in Daf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph. Now, that Moshe is turning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and beseeching him for mercy for the Jewish people, for the chait of the egel. Yeah. And Moshe says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Hello, he says essentially to God, you were the one that caused the sin of the golden calf. You, God, caused the sin. Right? Ilmole hakesef v'hazav shehir beis alahem. If it wasn't for the gold and silver that you gave them when they left Egypt, they wouldn't have done this. Unless you think that it's saying that he gave them the means to build it. That's not what it's saying, right? As the Gemara continues, Ein ha'arin noheim mikupa shel kash. The lion does not roar when it has a basket of hay in front of it. Ela mitoch basa, rather when it has meat. Meaning when a person experiences affluence, it goes to their head and makes them do things that they otherwise would not do. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you gave the Jewish people all this wealth and all these resources when they left Mitzrayim, right? You enabled them to commit this sin. As we discussed last week, a little bit, we touched on this concept, how the para, the mitzvah of the para aduma, the purification from this unique type of impurity of tumas meis, is a direct tikkun, is a direct correction for the egel hazav, as it says in the Midrash Rabbah in Bamidbar, in Parshas Chukas, right? Moshele ma'adavar dome, right? What is it like? It's like a small child who goes and he wreaks havoc in the house of the king, and the king says, Yavo imo v'enaket soas beno, that the mother should come and clean up the mess of her child. So too the para, the cow, okay, will come and clean up after the calf. The mother will come and clean up after the child. This para is a direct tikkun for what happened in the egel. And you see this pattern very, very explicitly, right? As Chazal say in Maseches Avos, in the well-known Brisa, in the end of Maseches Avos, Cherus al haluchos, there is freedom on the luchos. Cherus mimolach hamoves, there is freedom even from death. There is a transcendent state that the Jewish people were able to receive at Sinai, that they transcended even the most basic constraints that plague humankind, right? The constraint of death. And as the Gemara in Avodah Zarah tells us on Daf Hey, Amar Biyosi, Amar Lecha Kevan Deleka Misa Ein Lecha Tova Gedola Mizu. Right, that at Sinai the Jewish people achieved this incredibly high state that they were free even from death, right? But as the pasuk says in Tehillim Peites, the Gemara darshins, Ani Amarti Elohim Atem Uvnei Elyon Kulchem. I intended that you should all be as godly beings, okay? Achein, however, ke'adam temusun, because you fell with this chait of the ego, you brought back this state of death. You brought back Misa into the world. So the Matan Torah elevated the Jewish people beyond Tumas Meis. The Egel Hazav brings back Tumas Meis. And the Para Aduma is in some way meant to address this problem. It's meant to address the renewed phenomenon of Tumas Meis. I want to share with you a fascinating medrash, which is in Vayikra Rabbah, of all places, in Parshas Emor. Midrash Rabbah says something very, very interesting. How was the Jewish people came to this conclusion that they should build this statue at the foot of Sinai, dafka of a calf, right, of all things? How did they come to this conclusion? Ksiv Serafim Omdim Mima'alo. It says in the Pasuk in Yishayo Perek Vav, and as we all know, Yishayo Perek Vav chronologically is the first Perek of Yishayo. It's the first time that Yishayo experiences prophecy, right, in the Mikdash, and the first vision that he has is the vision that is commonly referred to as the Maisa HaMerkava. Right? It appears more explicitly in a more detailed version in Sefer Yechezkel, but indeed it's the same vision that Yishayo sees, okay? And it describes what he's seeing in this, right? Who are the characters, so to speak, these beings. Sarfim omdim mima'alo, shesh kanafayim le'echad. Each one has six wings. B'shtayim yichase panav. Two of them he's covering his face. U'b'shtayim yichase raglav. And with the other two, he's covering his feet. That's the Sarfim. The Sarfim, they have these wings, and two of them are covering their face, two of them are covering their feet. Okay? So says the Midrash, why are they covering their face? Shlo yiru pnei Ashchina, as a form of tznius, that they shouldn't gaze directly at the divine presence. As we see, for instance, by Rivka, right, the first time that Rivka meets Yitzchak, right, as an act of humility, as an act of tznius, right, she covers her face partially, right. And why do they cover their feet? Why do the Serafim cover their feet? As it says in the Pasuk in Yechezkel, again, Yechezkel is an important reference because it gives us more detail about what Yishayo was seeing, okay? It says, V'kaf raglehem kekaf regel egel. Their feet look like the hooves of a calf, okay? Uchsiv, and it says in the Pasuk in Shemos, i.e. in Parshas Kisisa, where they make the egel, asulahem egel masecha. Egel masecha. Al Shem, as it says in the Pasuk in Yechezkel, again, there's another Pasuk in Yechezkel, later on, Perikov test, V'loia Olaves Yisrael, Lemivtach Mazkir Avon, that the Jewish people will no longer, in Yemos HaMashiach, they will no longer have any remnant of their sin. What this Midrash is telling us, Rabosai, is that the inspiration to build the Egel Hazav was none other than the prophetic experience that the Jewish people had at Sinai, seeing this Maisa Merkava, and seeing the feet of the Seraphim, seeing the feet of these beings that carry along the Merkava of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And they see that it's an Egel. They see that it looks like the hooves of a calf. So like, oh, this is something that we should build in order to worship. Yeah. Yes. Yes. In fact, one of the only explicit references. It's a Midrash Rabbah in Vayikra Rabbah in Parsha Chaf Zayim. One of the only explicit references that we have to the idea of a Merkava is in Tehillim Samaches, which is Davin HaMelech's, unpacked, detailed version of Har Sinai. Rechev Elohim, the chariot of God descended. Yeah? Well, this is what the Jewish people are seeing when they're at Sinai. Okay? There are other midrashim, by the way, that are a lot more explicit on this point, right? I saw just before I came here, I was looking into this, obscure midrash called Midrash HaMakiri. We're talking about obscure sources, right? It says explicitly the Jewish people said they see the feet of the Seraphim, okay, and they say, oh, if this is what it looks like up there, then this is what we should build down here, so we should worship it, okay? What is this saying, Rabbosai? What is this saying that the Jewish people see the feet of the Seraphim and it looks like the feet of an Egel, so they build a whole Egel, they build a whole thing. Then they just make a statue of a hoof. They build a whole Egel, and that's what they pray to. The symbolism of the shore and how that fits in to the broader theme is the broader symbolism in Torah and in the Nevi'im specifically is a very, very big topic. But just to cover this, but just to touch on this a little bit, as the psukim in the first parak of Yechezkel discuss, the Merkava has how many faces on it? Sides are there on the Merkava? Huh? There are four sides, and each side has a specific creature on it. Right? Anyone know off the top of their head which are the four?
The lion,
eagle, yeah.
The baby.
The baby, yeah. The shore, yeah. Okay, the lion is on the right. Okay, the shore is on the left, and the other two sides is the right. The front is the Adam or the Kruv, right? Which is the Gemara Chigiga says is the same thing, and on the back is the Nesher. Okay, four sides. Okay, the left side. Okay, the left side of the Merkava has the Pnei Ashur. The shore. What the shore represents is the idea of the subjective, distinct identity of anything. Of the individual, of the collective, of the Bria at large, the fact that you are a distinct entity, that you are separate from everything else, that you exist, okay, as a distinct entity separate from Hashem. That is what the shore represents. There's a great line from the Maharal over here. We don't need to read the whole entire section, right? But the Maharal in Netzach Yisrael sums this up very, very nicely. And he says, Mechevan Shehashor hu betzad smol. Because the shore is on the side of the left, and he's speaking in very intentionally obscure language in order to deliver this idea b'lashon remes, right? But the idea is what we're saying. Kevan shahashor hu betzad smol, right? Efsharli he pared me'achdusa yusbarach. It is more apt to separate itself from the oneness of God. Again, this is what this idea means. What this idea is that all of the faces are equal, meaning they're all there, right? All these bechinos, all these attributes are part of the Merkava. But the ox is unique in that the ox it embodies subjectivity. That's what it is. It's the subjective force that you experience yourself as distinct. As the Pasuk in Mishlei says, Verov tvuos bekoach shur. Right? The all of the fruit of labor at the collective level, at the individual level. As we know, that pasuk is referring, that pasuk is all an allusion to Talmud Torah, like explicitly at the pshat level, not at the drasha level. At the pshat level, that pasuk, Rav Tuvas B'Koach Shor, is referring to Talmud Torah. That the Koach Shor, the primal powers that the human being can muster and invests in his Talmud Torah, that's how he gains success in learning. Right? The Rav Tuvas B'Koach Shor. The Shor is the subjective power that the person musters in order to assert himself or herself in the world. Yeah.
I don't know if it's Shabbat, but you say that it's small, it separates off from the rest of the world. Makes sense. It's small as Sham Kel. There's God.
Ah, Yafeh. Yafeh. It's actually pretty good. I wonder if that has a small Sham Kel. Yafeh.
And also,
Chazal allude to this idea many times, right? Yamin mekareves, the small docha, right? How the right brings closer. What does that mean, the right brings closer? Meaning, the attribute of the right side, so to speak, is the idea of things being in communion, connecting with each other, okay? Small docha is the idea of distinctness, right? That things are separate, right? And things are supposed to be separate, right? If there was no separateness, then you wouldn't exist. And you're supposed to exist. God wants you to exist. However, when that koach is misgaber to the point to a pathological form, this is what happens. This is what it means, Rabosai, that the feet of the malachim appear in the form of an ego. The feet. What does that mean, the feet? It means that the bottom manifestation of Elokus, as it appears in this world, as we experience it, right, the first rung of contact, so to speak, is the Shor, which is indeed what it is. Our first contact with Elokus, really of reality as a whole, is the experience of our own existence, of our own subjective existence. I think we spoke about a few, I don't know if this was in the context of a specific chabura, or if this was in the after party. We were speaking about the famous developmental psychologist Erik Erikson, a Jew, who was hired by the U.S. government about 70 years ago to write the authoritative pamphlet on early childhood development. And this was eventually released to the public, and it forms a book. It's very, very interesting. I have it in my house. Fascinating. Every 2 weeks of a child's life is like a new stage. It's unbelievable, right? But what characterizes every stage of development of a small child is becoming more and more aware that other things other than himself or herself exist. When the child is born, it's aware of the fact that, you know, it moves its hands around and it feels things, right? It feels its parents. It feels the table in front of it. It feels, right? But in the child's consciousness, all of that is just an extension of themselves. What's the difference in between if I, you know, feel a pain in my stomach or I bump my head against the table? We understand that there's a difference. One is an internal experience and one is something coming from outside, right? But the child doesn't realize that. In the child's consciousness, there is no difference between the internal and external. It's all me. There's just me and there's all the things that are making me feel things. But it's not... There's no me and everything else. It's just me. There is no anyone else. And the people that are holding me and feeding me and changing me and taking care of me, they're just here. They're here to help me. They're just part of my show. Yeah? And the definition of maturity is to become to more and more realization that no, you are embedded in this vast, rich network of existence, that there's you and everything else. Everything else, yeah. The Koach Shor in its most pathological form is the consciousness that your existence is the end all be all of everything. It's you and nothing else. And the feet of the Malachim, right? The feet, the bottom rung of Elokus. The feet of the Malachim, Perush, the bottom rung of Elokus. The first contact that we have with Elokus. Okay, the most chitzoni, the most external experience of Elokus.
What does that do with the Shor? In terms of I understand the concept. In terms of what is the shaykhus to the Shor as an animal? In a sense, how does that exemplify this character?
Why the Shor specifically embodies these traits? Well, because the Shor is the quintessential beast of burden. It's an extremely powerful animal that it's what sits at the root of all productive capacity. Right? It plows for you, it carries stuff for you. The ox represents like It's not sound that you say like strong as an ox, right? It's an incredibly powerful animal. Right? The cows that you, if you're ever on a farm and you interact with a cow, usually the animals are treated in order to make them less aggressive, if you know what I mean. Right? An actual natural male ox is incredibly, right? It's the type of animals that they're fighting, in the arenas in Spain. There's a reason why they choose those animals, because it's an incredibly powerful animal, right? With this It's not Kevishanaga, right? There's a reason why Nezek, the most aggressive type of Nezek, is literally called Shor. That's the Av and Nezikin of the most aggressive type of damage is called Shor. That's why it's called Yishar Koach Noam for that Ha'ara. Yeah? It's not Stam.
So the Kesher is essentially that because it's this thing that's super strong and it's burning and does things for people. So kind of our relationship with the ox is the relationship between...
It's more than the relationship with the ox. It's the ox in you. It's the oxness of you. It's much more than your relationship with the ox. I mean, you should have a relationship with the ox in you, but it's not like something outside. It's in fact very much part of your psyche. Anyway, where are we going with this? The idea that the para aduma needs to come to clean up after the mess of the egel. So what are we saying? We're saying that the egel is the understanding, right? That my subjective reality, my subjective experience is all that matters and nothing outside of me matters, right? And I'm all that exists. The tikkun to that is to temper that haughtiness, to temper that ga'avtonus. I'll read you another fascinating midrash. Like a few Medrash Rabbahs that like you should know just to be able to, you know, pull out when you need them. Very, very, very. This is in Bereishis Rabbah and Parsha Yud Tes. Parsha Yud Tes, Simon Hay. Okay? Now, we mentioned before that the whole progress of the Egel, reflects this pattern of death. Yeah? That Har Sinai freed the Jewish people from death. The Egel brought it back, and the Para is meant to address that problem again. But right? But there's a stage even before that. What's the stage before that? When death was introduced into the world to begin with. Achin ke Adam temusun, post-Egel, you are now like Adam, who is mortal. Adam, meaning not just any Adam, meaning the Adam. Adam Harishon. Okay? So says the Midrash, that tikach mipiryo vatochal. Okay? That she takes from the She took from the fruit and she ate it. Okay? It discusses like what the type of fruit was. Right? There's an opinion here that says that it was grapes, and she squeezed the grapes and she drank wine, and that's what she gave to Adam as well. And says the Midrash, Rabbanu Amri, Hischina mi'alelas alav gam Riboy ha'achila es ha'behema. After Chava gave from the Eitz Hadas to Adam, she then gave it to all of the animals in the world. All of them. Okay? He'achila es ha'behema v'sachayev es ha'ofos. Ha'kol shamula. All of the animals in the world took from the Eitz Hadas. Chutz, except for of echad. One species of bird. And what was this species of bird? Shmo chol. Chol, okay, that's the name of the bird. How do Hudich say this? What it says in the pasuk in Iyov in Parakov Tes, v'chachol arbe yamim, and I am like the chol that lives for many days. Debei Rabbi Yanai Omri, they explain in the base medrash of Rabbi Yanai what is the nature of this of hachol. Elef shana hu chai, it lives for 1,000 years. Basof elef shana eish yotza mikino, it burns up. Okay. A fire comes out of its nest and it v'sorafto umishtarbo kabeitza, and all that's left is this like, you know, solid orb-like thing v'chozer umegadel evarin, and from that it sprouts and grows again. Adkan the chol, right? We've all heard of this thing, right? We've all heard of this creature. Okay, the chol. This was the creature that never experienced the fracture caused by the Eitz Hadas. It never experienced the initial insurgence of death in the world. I want to go back to that midrash just for one moment, because we can see how this ties in so powerfully to the right to the lesson of the ego. Rabbi Yossi bar Zimra Omar. This is the same siman. Shosh dvar nemru ba'oso ilan. There are three things that were said about this Eitz Hadas. Tov lema'achal. It's really good to eat. It tastes really good. Yofel einayim. It looks really good. Umosif chachma. And it makes you more wise. As it says in the pasuk, v'tera isha ki tov, that she saw it was good. V'chitava hula einayim. Right? And it looks tasty. Okay? V'nechmar ha'etz la'askil. And it's also pleasant for the intellect. Okay? What are we saying? What we're saying here, and this is a sugya in and of itself, what, right, the nature of the Eitz Hadas. But essentially what we're saying is that the Eitz Hadas, the experience of eating from this tree, it gave the person an amplification of the self. You like how it looks, you like how it tastes, and it's mosif chachma, it's mosif das, it amplifies the subjective consciousness to its most powerful extent possible. And this was the first introduction of this Misa into the world. Yeah? It introduced death. Because why, Rabosa, this is the paradox of paradoxes, and we're getting into now why the Para Aduma contains this sod, it's the chok, it's the chukas haTorah that contains the mystery of mysteries. We're getting into that now. The irony of ironies is that when someone gets to the place where their subjective consciousness has been inflated, that they perceive themselves as the totality of all experience, that's what brings death. Meaning the experience of total existence brings about extinction. That's what it brings about. The inflation of the self causes the self to collapse. It causes self to collapse. Only through the nullification of anava, of true authentic humility, is the person able to have constant continuity. And this one creature, the Of HaChol, okay, the phoenix, was the only creature that didn't experience this pathology, that didn't have this disease, okay, enter its consciousness, enter its body. And its experience is that it burns up, it's consumed in fire, and from its ashes, it's born again. That's the experience of this creature.
So this
contains the sod. The sod is that the ability to have rejuvenation and to have continuity of life is dependent on the absolute and total self-nullification. It's the paradox of paradoxes. That the inflation of self brings about death, and the nullification of self brings about life. Chukas haTorah. It's the ultimate chok. It's the ultimate chok. Right? The ultimate, right? It doesn't follow logically. Not only does it not follow logically, it's antithetical. It seems to be, right, completely...
it couldn't live for more...
The cycle of this creature is that its whole existence is a process of nullification and rejuvenation. That's its whole existence, and that cycle continues forever, right?
I don't know
what it would have looked like, right? But the point of what Adam would have looked like absent the chait of the Eitz Hadas is not the point. The point is that this creature is embodying the bechina, right, the attribute of what the ideal was meant to be. And indeed, the way that the mother comes and cleans up after her child, the way that the para corrects the ego, is in this through this process. Right? Through the ashes of the para, it brings about a siluk, right? A removal of the right of the impurity of death. I'm going to read you now a very, very interesting source. And the reason why it's so interesting is because there's almost no way to know that it actually exists. This is the Hesped for a Chacham in Prague by the name of Akiva Ginzburg. Okay? That the Maharal gave... Okay? It's a Hesped. It's a Hesped for Hagon Ma'arenu Akiva Ginzburg. No, it's about 7 or 8 pages. And for some reason, the printers of the Maharal decided that the correct place to put this would be in the Sefer Bamidbar of Gur Aryeh. Right? The Perush of the Maharal on Rashi. Okay? That's the appropriate place to put it. At the end of that book. So everyone will know where to find it. Okay? But with the grace of God, we know where to find it. And the whole Hesped has many, many gems in it on many different topics. But one of the topics that the Maharal discusses is the philosophy, but a perspective on the idea of Tumas Meis. Yesh lisho ki im nemar ki amisa la adam einzu prisas v'chisar and mala rak shevachu letzadik. That when a tzadik, right, leaves the world, he's elevated to a higher, he's elevated to a higher dimension. So if that's true, lama hameis metame. Why is it that misa brings about this tuma? And anything holy cannot have any interaction with us. Even the Kohanim that work in the Mikdash, even if they're not working in the Mikdash, they can never have any contact with the mace. Right? We see clearly that the fact that there's such a stringent level of tumah, right, associated with the mace, that there is prisos, there is a lowliness to death. In order to explain this idea, okay. Excuse me, I lost the place. Parshas Emor is the place where we learn about these laws of Tumas Meis. Shabola Hazir al Tumas Hameis Ksiv Lenefesh lo yitama ba'amav. To a soul you should not contaminate. Lenefesh. You should not contaminate yourself to a soul. Okay? V'yesh lisho lama omar lenefesh. To a soul lo yitama. Dehavale l'ksiv binefesh. In a soul, okay? Ki etzla shratzim, right? For instance, in all the other forms of tumah tara, for instance, by shratzim, kol hanogea bi nivlasam. It's always making contact with the thing. Bi, in this, okay? The prefix bi in Lashon HaKodesh means that you make contact with the thing. What does that mean? Le nefesh lo yitama ba'amav. It's not because of an inherent loneliness or a flaw that has to of the mace that it contracts tumah. The soul that has left the body, who nivdal min hachayim, is supernally higher than all life in this world. And the people that are still alive in this earthly domain have no relevance to the domain of the soul as it's left, once it's left the body. Listen to Chiddush, Rabosa. Listen, it's unbelievable. In Maseches Yadayim, in Perek Dalet of Maseches Yadayim, Ditnan Hosam, Omrim et Tzidukim. The Tzidukim had a conversation with Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. There are many instances of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai going up against the Tzidukim. Kibalnu aleichem prushim sha'atem omrim kitzvei hakodesh mitamim. The Tzidukim say, we heard that you prushim, right, meaning Chazal, you, if you touch kitzvei hakodesh, if you touch a Sefer Torah, for instance, then you consider your hands impure. Kitzvei hakodesh are mitame as hayadayim. That is, in fact, the halacha, okay? The Sifrei Hameiras ain't a mitam masayadayim. Sifrei Hameiras was a known sect of pagans. They were so bad that even the Tzedukim thought that they were pagans. Okay, so he says that, right, the Sifrei Meiras aren't mitam masayadayim. Right, hayitachin that a Sefer Torah is mitam your hands, but this, right, this apikorsus isn't mitam your hands. Yeah, Uperish Zen says the Maharal. This is a conversation between Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai and the Tzedukim, but. Again, what's germane to our conversation? The Tzedukim thought that what is tumah? Tumah is something that's like lowly, that's, you know, detestable, that you want to go away from. Okay, the chisaron, and indicating some lack or flaw, just like other forms of tumah that are clearly there's something wrong going on. Right, sheretz as well. All forms of tumah seem to be evolving around things that are negative. Right, unclean. Some type of chait, as we know, by a mitzora, right? It's all triggered by some, right, very serious sin. Lefikach Amru Ein Atem Omrim Sifra Kodesh Metamim Sayadaim VeSefer Amera Shehim Sifrei Minim Ein Metamim. How could it be that you're going to tell me that a Sefer Torah is Metame and the Sifrei Minim aren't Metame? Right, the Svarim of the Apikarsim aren't Metame. I'm just going to skip it to get to the point. I'm sorry. V'im kein al korcha chatatzarich lomar lo bishvil sheyesh chisaron b'meis u'metame. It's not because of an inherent lack in the mace that it contracts tuma. Rak bishvil shahameisin v'hachayim ein lem chibo yachan. The soul of the person who has left this world is so categorically removed from the lowly existence of this world that there is no connection between them. When a person attempts to connect to something that is fundamentally beyond his experience, it causes him to be also distanced, and that's what brings about the tumah. This is a very, very deep sod, Rabosai. Just to hash this out just a little bit, okay? We have a well-known Masorah, and this is right, has its roots in Chazal, and is talked about more in later Rishonim, and we're all familiar with this idea that a person should refrain from engaging in certain types of Talmud Torah until they've matured, right? As the Rambam says in Hilchos Talmud Torah, right, when he's talking about Maisa Bereishis and Maisa Merkava, the more esoteric areas of the Masorah, right? Shelo Yilmad Maisa Merkava Maisa Bereishis Ad Shiyamale Kreso B'Basar V'Yayin, until he fills his stomach with the main course, so to speak. Meaning, once a person has become scholarly and knowledgeable in the basic areas of Torah, then they can go and move on to the more advanced things. As the Gemara in Zukkah explicitly says, right, Davar Gadol, Davar Katam, right, with the scholarship of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, he knew everything, the big things and the little things. What are the little things? Havayas Abaye v'Rava. Those are the little things, right? What Abaye and Rava are talking about, right? Davar Gadol, Zumayis Merkava, right? Those are the big things. Big, what do you mean big? Meaning, they're very, very sophisticated. They're not simple things to understand. Now, why is this? It's not giving you advice on saying, you know, you should progress, you know, step by step and you train yourself. That's also a point, okay? But it's saying it's an imperative. What it's saying is that if a person attempts to engage in these sophisticated areas without having the precursory, right, preparation and understanding, they're going to understand those areas wrong. They're going to understand it wrong. Why are they going to understand it wrong? Because they're so rachok mimenu, as the Maharal just told us in this hesped, they're so removed from him that any attempt to engage in something that is far away from you puts you in trouble, right? As they say, a little bit of knowledge is dangerous, right? You have the confidence to engage in something that's fundamentally beyond you, and you end up making contact with it, but the contact that you have is totally distorted. Understanding these things wrong is much worse than not understanding them at all. That's the danger. Just like Kisve HaKodesh or Metame. Why are Kisve HaKodesh Metame, says the Maral? Yes, there's the level of pshat that we know that they would, you know, that they would store, you know, Truma and Maaser Sheni with the Kisve HaKodesh. So in order to, you know, make sure that people didn't do this, so they made the Gezeirah on Kisve HaKodesh that they would be Metame Asayadayim. Okay, that's at the pshat level. But at the higher panemius level, the reason that Kisve HaKodesh or Metame is because Kisve HaKodesh contains something that is fundamentally nivdal from us. It's removed from us. And even though we do have access to it, we have access to understanding it. We have access to at least some of the layers of understanding of Kisve HaKodesh. Ultimately, the essence of understanding the thing is so far removed from us that an attempt to engage in it brings about tumah. All it does is confuse you more, right? We've all experienced this. This is not something, right, this sounds so esoteric and removed, but nothing could be closer to us, right? We have experiences that, you know, right, you try to understand something that's, you know, more complicated than you're able to, right? You bite off more than you can chew, so to speak, and you leave, you walk away with a, it's like you were just hit by a truck. It's like you can't think, you're confused. That's tumah. Tumah, like timtum, to be clogged up. Something that stops, it stops it up. Tahara means clarity, like Tzoharayim, right? Shraga betihara, maimahani, and the Gemara in Mizrachim. Betihara, why do you need, right? A person needs a candle when it's, right, when it's shining sun outside. If everything is clear, you don't need a candle. Betihara, betahara is clarity. Tuma is letamtem, metamtem es halev, it closes up the heart. engaging, right, the highest form of tumah. There's the lower version of tumah where you're right. You interact with something that's, as the Maharal says, chisos. It's a lowly, disgusting thing, and you right, you touch it, and you become dirty because you touched it. That's like level one of tumah. But level two of tumah is engaging with something that's so high and lofty that any attempt to interact with it will leave you betumah. It'll leave you confused. That is the it very, very connected to the experience of the Arba Nichnas Ulo Pardes. Yes, very, very much connected. In fact, that is what occurred. Yes, but that's for another time to unpack that. The sod of the tumas mace and the duality of the fact that it is metaher and metame at the same time. The para is metaher and metame. Is because the whole ritual of the para contains both sides of this coin. That these two sides, the separation between them is kechut asar. One side of the para aduma coin is the infinite inflation of the self consciousness of the subjective awareness, which is the etzem death, as we said, right? And the other side is the complete and utter nullification, the ashes, the burnt up ashes. That is the complete and utter nullification that allows Chaim to reemerge, which is what. And understanding this, you understand that it's a davar pasha that the person that prepares the para becomes tameh, just like someone that handling Kisvei HaKodesh becomes tameh. Someone that's trying to engage with something that's fundamentally beyond him, it becomes tameh. You contract tumah from that experience, right? But at the same time, it also right through the beetle, through the burning, through the ashes. Right, you're able to get a little bit of the bechina of the of hachol, of the phoenix that's reborn from the beetle. Right, the beetle is what allows it to reemerge. That's what allows it to reemerge. The Gemara in Sota Dav Hei says right about the baal hagava, about the person that acts this mida of haughtiness. Ein ani v'hu yecholim lador b'mador echas. God says about such a person, me and him cannot exist in the same dwelling. What does that mean? What it means, right? If you can't exist in the same dwelling as God, that means you don't exist at all. That's what that means. Right? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Madura Shel Olam, as we've quoted many times. God isn't in the world. The world is in God. If you can't be with God, if you can't be together with God, that means you don't exist. And what that ultimately means, what it's saying when God says, me and him can't be together, what that means is, he can't be with anyone. Because all he experiences is himself. That's what that means. This person, right, the Baal Gava, cannot be with anyone. To end off at the Bavli in Megillah and Daf Lamed Aleph. In all places where you see the grandeur of God, Sham Atara on Vasanusa, there you see God's humility. We tend to understand the idea of humility in the superficial parlance understanding that, you know, don't be a jerk, you know, recognize your flaws. And there is truth to that, obviously. Yes, it's important to not be a jerk. It's important to treat people nicely. That's true. But the essence of anava, is the complete and total awareness that other people exist. That's it. That's what anava is. Anava is the deep awareness and understanding that other people exist. And it's the ability to know that just like you have thoughts and you have experiences and you have hopes and aspirations and you experience pain, all the other people, they experience all of that also. All the other people are experiencing that. Everyone is also an olam katan, as Chazal say. They are every individual that you interact with is their own world. Everyone. And the one that experiences that in its most powerful way possible is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the only one that can be aware of that reality to its fullest extent. Because as we just said a moment ago, God is not in the world. Right? Ein ha'olam mekomo. The world is not his place. It doesn't exist in the world. Hu mekomo shel olam. The world exists in him. It exists in him. So he's the most potently aware of all of the other, right, the existence of all other things. And that's what makes God the most humble being. No one's more humble than God, because he is the most powerfully aware of the existence of everything else.
Sister Sharon says the same thing. Huh? By Moshe Rabbeinu. He says that the chief reason that people aren't humble is because they know nothing.
Nachon.
And they said that the priest who was the most humble we see was Moshe Rabbeinu.
Nachon.
And he knew the most.
Nachon. Nachon. And this is the Yisod Rabosa. The egel is the cheta egel is the reemergence of this tendency, this powerful tendency that literally is the root of the whole downfall of mankind, going back to Adam Arishon. The need to amplify and assert our subjectivity at the expense of everything else, and that our own limited, narrow experience is the totality of existence. And the tikkun to this, right, the mother that comes to clean up after her child is the Para Aduma, which embodies within it this incredible and profound betel self-nullification, so that we can inculcate into our consciousness this fundamental, lofty empathy, right? The derech of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be aware, to be totally and constantly aware of the full, rich spectrum of existence, which allows us to transcend. It allows us to transcend the curse of Misa. It allows us to transcend this curse. Mizrat Hashem. Someone asked me to. You asked me to mention to say something about Ruach Chaim. Right? In addition to the fact that we just said this, quoting this Hesped now of this Talmud Chacham that lived in the time of the Maharal and what the Maharal had to say about how confronting Misa, right, experiencing the death of someone that we respect, of someone that's someone that we consider a role model and someone to aspire to, it makes us think about these things. Yeah, and if there's one midah that we can hone in on, I feel right, and it was also expressed in Rav Chaim's father, the Stipler, is that there was an authentic curiosity and appreciation that permeated everything that Rav Chaim did in the world. He was a person that transcended all the fanfare, that transcended all the right, all the pomp. Right? He never had any official position. Wasn't the rav of any community. Wasn't Rosh Yeshiva. He sat and he did his thing. And you know, anyone that had any interaction with him, and I've heard firsthand from people that. Tremendous simplicity, a tremendous pshitos, tremendous simplicity about him. We've spoken about this before, I think, that we see many times that characters in Tanakh are called Na'arin. They're called children, young people, even much later in their life. Right? When Yeshua is 40 years old, or perhaps even older, he's called Nar. He's called a Nar. Yeah. Which means that there is an attribute of simplicity and pure curiosity that is natural to a child that eventually along the way we lose. and we lose that unfortunately, the reason most of the time that that's lost is because we receive messages from our surroundings, from our peers, from our surroundings, from society at large, that, you know, you have to grow up, you have to be more real, you have to be mature, you have to be focused, you have to, right? And while that has truth to it, while these messages of maturity have a truth, to lose that fundamental simplicity and curiosity of the child is an incredible loss. Right, it's an incredible loss. If there's one single attribute that we can point to, of right, what's lost in the inflation, in the subjective inflation that is associated with the egel, that is associated with death. If there's one thing that we can point to that's the most tragic, it's the loss of this. Right, it's being so self-aware of being so self-aware that we. That we fail to, we're no longer able to act smoothly without self-awareness in the world. And everything is measured, everything is calculated, everything is, we think about how things are going to look and how things are going to be perceived and projected, and we lose that simplicity. Mizrat Hashem. Mizrat Hashem. Going through the avoda of the Parah Aduma, and in the merit of the Gadol Yisrael that we all unfortunately lost, we should be able to bring this attribute closer to our hearts. Chizku v'yamis tovavchem kol miyachem l'Hashem.